You're listening to the best of Talkin' Sports with Byron, an on-demand audio presentation of RedPeachSports.com and ESPN977.com.
Thunder, baby. You know, Tabor, I had somebody tell me this week that we have the best intro music. And I told them they were right. Hello, everyone. Talkin' Sports, 97.7 FM. It's just you and me, and I'm B, Byron Avery, your host here on Talkin' Sports on ESPN 97.7 FM. I'm with you here in the Coldwell Banker Group 1 Realty Studios in West Monroe, back at HQ, Master John Tabor. Good afternoon, Mr. Tabor.
How goes it?
It's going. It's another beautiful day.
It is. Get out to a ballpark.
Absolutely. Ballpark somewhere, high school, college, softball, baseball. A lot going on today. Speaking of a lot going on, let's go ahead and get to our lineup card for today's program. Love that organ music. Great ballpark music. You can hear it at your local ballpark sometimes. Definitely when you're watching baseball on TV. Always love that. Leading off for us today at around 12:08 is going to be Zach Green from Car King. He always tells us what's hot on the lot, where you can find great deals in Monroe. Our 12:15 segment, we're going to be honored to have Cody Futrell for two segments today. With the first segment, we're going to talk about local baseball and softball, what's going on with the softball playoffs and area baseball. Then in the second segment with Cody, we're going to talk about what's going on with LHSAA. A lot happening there. At 1 o'clock, we're going to try to have Dr. Douglas Brown again. He had a patient with some issues last week. That's why he wasn't able to join us, but we're going to try to have Dr. Brown again today. Played football at Duke. Then in segment six, we're going to have our What's Up segment, our new Where Are They Now segment that we started last week. Today's guest, former Lincoln Parish High School star Tag Rome, who went on to play collegiately at Northeast Louisiana University, of course now ULM. And in the last two segments of the day, we're going to have Sean Williams, first segment with Jack Kopansky, co-writers of the At What Cost or The Cost of Success, talking about knee injuries and CTE. And then we're going to talk a little Saints football as well. So that's our lineup for today. And looking forward to having those. All guests appear on the Car King hotline. Thanks to Car King for their broadcast partnership. A lot going on. Been a crazy week. I know I've listened to you guys, Tabor, throughout the week talking about the draft. And I've got something that might surprise you. Not new news or anything. But I think if I was a betting man, I'd put some money on San on that number two draft pick. What do you think? You know what I'm talking about? When he said they're going to take Ezekiel Elliott, the Eagles? Tabor might be on the phone, but we'll get into that a little bit, but I think I'm going to agree with Santoria Black about the Eagles moving up to get Ezekiel Elliott, and I'll explain why later. What's happening with you? You out there, the listener. Who do you want to hear about on our What's Up segment? Former area high school athletes, whether they went to college or not, whether they went to college in Louisiana or not. They could have went to Tech, Grambling, McNeese, ULM, any of them. Any of the schools, but we haven't heard about them in a while. I'm telling you, one that I'd love to have, and I've seen stuff on him recently, is Bobby Joe Douglas. I didn't know where he was. I didn't know he was in Monroe as a minister. But I remember following Bobby Joe Douglas during his days at Marion, and can't believe he's not in the Hall of Fame. So we'll follow up on that and see what else we can learn about Bobby Joe Douglas, see what we can do to help get him into the Hall of Fame. But any athletes that you want to know about, you can call us during the show on the Car King Hotline at 888-993-7762. Reach us on the Pulpwood Producers text line during the show, also 888-993-7762. Hit us up on Twitter. You can all, you know, do that 24/7 at the Glassworks of West Monroe Twitter feed, T-Sports, at T-Sports977FM. Send us an email to the Riverport Creative Group email inbox, tsports977fm@gmail.com. Or go to our Facebook page and post something about someone you want to find out about it. Find out about on the Assurance Financial Facebook page, facebook.com/talkingsports977fm. We are brought to you by Anytime Fitness of Monroe, West Monroe, and Calhoun, and Anytime Fitness of Ruston and Texarkana. This hour is brought to you by Gina Eubanks Allstate Insurance in Ruston and Minden. Gina Eubanks, agency owner since 1995. And we are presented by DBAT of Monroe. DBAT for all your baseball and softball training needs. DBATmonroe.com. We've got way too many things open on this computer. But we're not going to be able to have Zach Green for our opening segment today. We'll have him a little bit later in the show, but that's okay. We're also going to surprise him with a little happy birthday. Today is Zach Green's birthday, so any of you out there that know Zach and you're going by Car King today on Louisville Avenue, stop in and tell him happy birthday. So, Tabor.
Yes, sir.
Did you hear what I said earlier?
You know your producer well. I was on the phone with Zach at that time. So go ahead and rehash that question you were putting out there.
Well, okay, so the other day I heard Santoria and Fox talking about the number two draft, and Santoria never hesitated to say that the Eagles were going to take Ezekiel Elliott, and Fox jumped in and they have a bet going on. Well, I've looked at it and thought about it, and I think that my bet would be on Santoria.
See, I disagree.
Well, I think that the Eagles believe the Cowboys were going to be all in on Ezekiel Elliott because they want to get back to the DeMarco Murray situation. They know that their quarterback, Tony Romo, is fragile, and if they have a strong running game, then they can deal with it. They didn't have a running game last year to go with those backup quarterbacks, and they got nothing. Now, Philadelphia, everybody says they're going to take one of the two quarterbacks. Well, again, it's well documented how much money they have tied up in quarterbacks. Head coach Doug Peterson is set on Chase Daniels, brought him with him from Kansas City, paying him $7 million a year. They've got Sam Bradford at about, $12 million a year. And I believe they think if they get Ezekiel Elliott, then it doesn't matter. You know, they can play Sam Bradford this year and get Chase Daniels integrated in, maybe get Sam Bradford enough playing time where he can show that he's good, maybe get a trade for Sam Bradford, put Chase Daniels in, and Ezekiel Elliott is going to be able to run the ball, catch the ball. He's going to pick up the blitzes. He's a good, great blocking back. The more I look at it, I think the Eagles jumped up to get in front of the Cowboys to take Ezekiel Elliott. But you don't agree at all.
No, okay. You ready for me to put holes in that argument?
Go ahead.
Okay. The pick is at number two. But the value of the pick is what Philly gave up. So you've got to consider, as a running back, I don't care who it is, man, even Leonard Fournette next year, is a running back worth the value that Philly gave up for just that pick? I say no. Two, new head coach Doug Peterson. He's a quarterback. I don't think he's bringing Chase Daniel over at $7 million a year to be the long-term fix in Philly. That's just my opinion. I think he's bringing him over to be a serviceable starter while he grooms the heir apparent, who I believe will be Wentz. I really think Jeff Fisher made the move in Los Angeles to take Jared Goff, And I do believe Peterson feels that Wentz is his guy. Again, this is purely speculation on my part. Yeah, I get the Dallas dynamic, you know. But can you make decisions upon your personnel in regards to what you feel other teams are going to do? A team in your division, I understand that you play twice a year, but you still got 14 other games on your schedule that you want to put the best roster on the field to compete with. And in the long-term process, I think it's going to be the quarterback.
And I don't really have any argument against any of your points. I really don't. I just think that they want to win now. Okay, so I think they want to win now. And to your point, and I'm not talking about them facing Dallas. I'm just talking about them being sure Dallas was going to get him, going to take him. So I think they, what do you call it, they mortgage the farm, and they're going to get Ezekiel Elliott to win now because I think they got two quarterbacks that they think can get the job done. And with Ezekiel, and again, like you said, pure speculation.
Mm-hmm.
If I was an NFL expert, I wouldn't be working here.
No kid. The biggest disagreement I have with you, and again, it's just differing opinions, is that you don't mortgage the farm. And I agree, that's a very good description. You don't mortgage the farm for a running back. In today's NFL, especially when virtually every team is almost running a two-back system now, you know, you could count on one hand true dominant bell cow running backs in the league now.
I agree.
Now whether Elliott can be that kind of back, man, that kid's talented. There's no doubt in that. I just don't think that the running back position, no matter who it is, carries that much value to make that big of a move. But that's the beauty of it. They'll prove us both wrong and end up picking Jalen Ramsey. You watch.
Well, I tell you what. What we'll do is we'll pick this back up later. We're going to take our first break. When we come back, we'll have Cody Futrell from the New Star. You're listening to Talkin' Sports on ESPN 97.7 FM. Welcome back to the program. Talking Sports here on ESPN 97.7 FM. Again, this hour brought to you by Jeannie Eubanks Allstate Insurance in Ruston and Minden. Jeannie Eubanks, agency owner since 1995. Welcome to the program now, our good friend Cody Futrell from the New Star. Thanks again for joining us, Cody.
Hey, man, how's it going?
It's going great today. Great day to be out at the ballpark. Tell us what you got going on today.
I'm going to be headed out after we get done here. I'll be headed out to OCS for their big second-round playoff game with a ticket to Sulphur on the line here. It's a 1 o'clock play. The Eagles pulling off that upset as a 22 seed on the road in the first round and earning the home game today. And like you said, a beautiful day for it.
Okay. So let's quickly go over the brackets. I know in 5A we had a shutout that was – by some, unexpected, but Ouachita moving on.
Yeah, Ouachita with the shutout over West Monroe. Like you said, I don't know that it was a big shock to the people that they won the game because they had, they had already done that once or twice to West Monroe this year in district play. But the fact that it was a shutout, as well as West Monroe had been playing, that was a really young team that had grown up throughout the year and had won some really good games on their resume as of late with the shutout there to win that one. That was big for Ouachita. So they're back in Sulphur for the second time in 3 years. A couple years ago they were state champions under Tim Whitman. Were tripped up in the second round last year, but this year they punched their ticket back to Sulphur and a little bit off the beaten path, though, but still kind of relevant in 5A. Pineville went down to one of the top seeds in the state, Mount Carmel, and pulled off a 12-2 upset. So, and Ash is a really strong program. They also are going to Sulphur. So 2-5A, I believe, has four teams now going to, or three teams going to Sulphur.
Now, what I did not see, excuse me, did not see yet, was I know Ruston won its first round game. what happened in the second round?
I believe they're playing today.
Okay, that's right. I knew I didn't see a result, and I was trying to remember why. Okay, so they're playing today, so we could have another one down there.
Right.
And in 4A, tell us about that bracket.
I'm having some slow computer problems. I'm trying to pull the brackets up. I know that West Washaw is playing today, so they have a chance to punch their ticket. Neville and Bastrop have already done that, so we have two out of the three area 4A teams going down. All three of them were there last year, so this could be the second year in a row that we've got three teams in that 4A bracket to get down there. And West Washaw had to go through Bastrop to get to the state championship last year. They were defeated in the finals. So the Lady Chiefs kind of have some unfinished business. A lot different team than what they had last year. They had a whole bunch of seniors last year, so they have a much younger team, but they still have a lot of experience too. So, you know, it's kind of a mixture. And those young girls have really grown up throughout the year. So Ashley Burkett Hoyle, she's really got a strong team again.
Okay. I'm trying to, as well as you, I'm trying to get to the open the 3A bracket here. Do you have it up yet?
No, I'm still having trouble myself.
All right, I've got it here. All right, so pardon us as we go through this.
Technical difficulties here.
Yes, absolutely. I do see that Winfield defeated Church Point 13-3. They're scheduled to play today at 2 o'clock against Iota. So Winfield against Iota today. Let me get over here.
Caldwell, in 3A, Caldwell punched their ticket already, beating Buckeye 10-0.
Okay.
So the Lady Spartans will move on. They'll play Lutcher in their game there. And Gina, of course, you know, they've had a strong season. They were the 3 seed. They're also going to go and play Brusley down in Sulphur.
Yeah, Brulee usually a good team. I tell you what, Gina, though, looks pretty tough. Their first two round games, they won by a combined score of 28-5. 15-0,
wow.
13-5. So double figure runs in both of those games. 28-5, pretty strong so far for the number 3 seed, Gina.
Absolutely. Pulling up the 2A bracket, and we'll take a look at that. And one of those, of course, is the game I'm going to today, which is the Washaw Christian Lady Eagles. Will be at home today at 1 o'clock start time there. And they will be, of course, playing a Hannon, Archbishop Hannon from down South Louisiana, with a ticket to Sulphur on the line. The winner of that game would play Catholic New Iberia or Rose Pine, which also plays today at 1 o'clock. Sterlington got tripped up by Menard 3-0. I believe that game was played a couple of days ago. Their season ended there. And then Mangum, they will play today at 1 o'clock down at St. Charles Catholic. And I believe NOLAPreps.com will have an internet stream of that game if any Mangum fans are interested in that.
Okay. Moving on to 1A, number 1 seed Oak Grove beat Gaydon 14-0. And then beat East Beauregard 9-0. So there's 23-0 right there for Oak Grove, making its way down to the fast pitch 56. Over on the other side, Hainesville gets beat 15-0. I know that St. Fred got tripped up in the first round, lost 10-0 to St. Mary's. Delhi Charter lost 12-0 in the first round to Catholic of Point Coupee. And then I know that Beekman Charter, in its first ever run in the appearance in the playoffs, they lost to Grand Lake 6-0. My eyes are really bad. Grand Lake 6-0. Grand Lake then gets beat by Cedar Creek 15-0, and Cedar Creek beat Logansport in the first round 16-0. So Cedar Creek is making some waves getting down to the fast pitch 56. They've won their first two games by a combined score of 31-0.
Right, and that was the game I covered yesterday, was Cedar Creek and Grand Lake. And Cedar Creek is just really, really strong. Mary Terrell is in her second straight year as their main pitcher, and she pitched through an ACL tear last year and was our all-area pitcher of the year. She's healthy this year, and she's just as good, if not better, with not having to fight that kind of an injury. And they've got experience up and down the lineup, And this is their third straight year now to go to the Fast Ridge 56. So they, you know, they've got a lot of experience down there. And a couple years ago, they also won the state championship. So, you know, we've got some really strong teams in this area getting down there. And like you said, they've had back-to-back shutouts in the playoffs and are just really, really playing lights out right now. And also in the area of LaSalle Parish, the five seed, they will be moving on. They won their first round game, I believe, 15-1 in the first round against Westminster, and then 17-11 in a shootout yesterday against Central Catholic. So they're going to move on and play the four seed Ascension Catholic. That should be a really good game down in Sulphur.
And then, of course, Arcadia losing in the first round to, was it Ascension Catholic, I believe?
Let's see.
I know they lost their first round game.
Yeah, Delhi Charter also lost in the first round. And just going through the bracket here, and I'm not finding Arcadia. But, Ascension Catholic in the first round. That was a tough game for Arcadia. 15-0 was the final.
And moving on to Class B, I do see that Simsboro, they got past Patrick Taylor in the first round, 16-10. Defensive struggle there, but Simsboro falling 3-0 to number 3 seed Oak Hill in the second round.
Yeah, their bats kind of let the Lady Tigers down. You know, they had had a pretty strong showing in district, but weren't able to keep that momentum going. Would have set up a potential meeting with Forest. Forest plays today at 3:30. See if they can punch their ticket to the Fast Ridge 56, but could have been a Simsboro Forest. That would have been a fun matchup down there.
Right.
And you know, that won't happen, but still an area team has a chance to go here in Class B. And I believe that was it for our Class B teams.
Quitman falls to Stanley. Stanley, I tell you what, he's pretty tough. He plays by himself, and you know, he plays boys and girls, but he wasn't able to stand up to Florine, the number one seed in Class B, beating Stanley 15-0.
Yeah, and Quitman, you know, Quitman was there in Sulphur a couple years ago, but they fell there 7-6, I believe was the final there.
I do see that Weston, the number five seed, they had a they had a bye in the first round, but they beat Avoyelles Charter in the second round. So Weston, 8-7 winner against the 12 seed Avoyelles Charter. They are headed down to Sulphur. And Shudrant, though, Shudrant fell 11-4 in the first round, and that would have set up a matchup against Shudrant and Castor, the number four seed Castor, home of Lee Arthur Smith, former big league pitcher. Castor, the number four seed, beats 13 seed Monterey 8-0 to make it to Sulphur.
Right, Weston's a really good team as well. You know, they've got some experience. It hasn't been too long since they've been as well. The Wolves are really looking good right now, and you know, I'm interested to see some of our B teams. You know, they get down there, and you know, people will think it's kind of a hidden gem around here is Class B softball and Class C as well, and interested to see how some of these teams do.
So Claiborne Christian, they're playing. When do they play? They beat Downsville 24-0, and it doesn't say what time their second round game is.
I believe after talking to the coach, I'll cover that game as well. That game was on Thursday afternoon, and I believe that they are expecting to play at 2:00 on Friday. It'll be their first game.
Okay, and then of course Summerfield losing 15-0. Summerfield, the 15 seed, falling 15-0 to number 2 seed Maurepas.
Right, and you know, getting back to that Claiborne Christian game for just a second, you know, in all of my years covering high school sports in this area, which has been 7 years now, never seen a game like that in my life, baseball or softball. Claiborne Christian scored 20 runs in the second inning alone to win that one 24-0 in 3 innings. Just an amazing offensive outburst.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Cody will still be with us. We'll finish up area ball, and then we'll talk some about what's going on with the LHSAA. You're listening to Talking Sports, ESPN 97.7 FM. Welcome back to the program, Talking Sports here on ESPN 97.7 FM. It's just you and me, and I'm B. Byron Avery, your host here on Talking Sports. Let's get back with Cody Futrell from the News Star. Cody, that wraps up, you know, what's going on so far on the softball side. What's going on in high school baseball?
A couple of highlights. I'll go through today's schedule for people that want to go out and see a game today. But a couple of highlights are that West Monroe High School wrapped up the District 2-5A championship with a sweep of Ash. I believe they only lost one district game the entire regular season. So congratulations to West Monroe and Coach Wade Seminole on another district championship. So they'll definitely get a first-round home game. Have to see how the power ratings kind of come out. But look for West Monroe to really make some noise in the playoffs. They've developed a couple of strong starting pitchers, which you have to have in the playoffs. You got to have more than that one big arm, and they've got a couple, and they've got some relief pitching and some strong offense. So look for those guys to make some noise. But also probably one of the highlights of the baseball schedule today, a doubleheader because of all the craziness with the rainouts and the rain delays that we've had in the area. West Ouachita will have a senior day, and we'll have we'll have a doubleheader against the Bastrop Rams today. I believe that starts at 2 o'clock, and West Ouachita with a win there, with finishing off the sweep there, will wrap up a district title themselves in District 2-4A, which is one of the toughest districts in all of high school baseball in Louisiana, especially in 4A, with Neville, West Ouachita, Grant, Tioga. All of those teams went to a second round or better in the 4A playoffs last year. But do what you want me to go through the schedule real quick right now?
Yes, if you let's do some of that. And I know that you're probably going to be, if you have time, at some of those games this week. But let's hit the highlights for the coming week.
Yeah, well, these are games today.
Okay.
If people that want to get out at 1 o'clock today, at North Webster and Claiborne Christian at Claiborne, that's going to be at Claiborne Christian, North Webster from the Shreveport area, coming over to play the Crusaders. Also at 1 o'clock, Summerfield and Hainesville, that game at Summerfield in Class C. Also, Family Christian from Winsboro, they'll have a 2 o'clock game against Block. At Family Christian. Moving on to Class B, Forest and Darbon Woods Charter will play at 2:30 at Forest. Also, Shuteren and Simsboro, that's a big local rivalry. Those two not very far apart at all. 1 p.m. District game starting at Simsboro. So that should be interesting for anybody that wants to go out and catch that one. Also, Weston and St. Joseph of Plashville will play at 12 o'clock. That one down at St. Joseph's, though, so you better leave quickly to try to catch the rest of that one.
That's right.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, two Lincoln Parish schools, they know each other well. They've played each other many, many years, and no love lost over there. Not that they're bitter rivals, but they are rivals, and that should be a good game between Simsboro and Shuteren.
Absolutely. Shuteren and Simsboro are both playing some good baseball and have been, and that should be a good one, and the communities will be excited about that one, so it should be a good atmosphere too. One that just got underway, Ruston, the Ruston Bearcats playing on the road at Natchitoches Central in district play. That'll close out their district schedule, I believe. And we mentioned West Monroe closed out last night against Ash. And Ouachita apparently has the day off today. So they're not in action. Moving on to 4A, we mentioned West Ouachita and Bastrop, big series there. Also, Franklin Parish and Neville, they're playing today. Game just got underway, and they are on that game is at Franklin Parish down in Winsboro. In 3A, some of our local teams in action, Union Parish, the Farmers. This is a pretty good game. It should be a pretty good game, too, of local rivals, out of district to play. It just got underway. St. Frederick and Union Parish Union Parish. Those two programs are up and coming. I think, Coach Spadafora, he does double duty as the football coach and the athletic director and also a baseball coach. So he wears a lot of hats there at Union Parish.
Absolutely.
And Joey Lee is back in the area after a good stint as head coach at Alexandria Senior High. He's back in the area now at St. Fred's, rebuilding that program, and he's doing a good job as well. And looking through our the rest of the 3A, I don't see any other local games of interest here. In 2A, the Sterlington Panthers, they'll get started here momentarily, a 1 o'clock game against Jonesboro Hodge, that game at Sterlington. So 1 o'clock, people want to go out to that. Another
and real quick, Cody, I know that that one thing that I find interesting, to use a word, Jonesboro Hodge should really be a good program this year. You know, they've got probably what would be Weston's, I think, top three players, because if you're headed in a certain course, certain direction with your academics, and you go to Weston, you have to take certain classes at J. Hodge.
Okay, yeah.
I don't know if it's dual enrollment, AP, I don't know what it is. But there are some of the Weston kids that take classes in the morning at J. Hodge, and some of them have decided that since they're at J. Hodge in the morning, they might as well stay there all day. So I think Weston's top three players are playing for Jonesboro Hodge. And I know Jonesboro Hodge coach, and we didn't discuss that because that's not really in his control or anything like that, but that's made J. Hodge a power this year.
It certainly can't hurt.
Absolutely.
So that's big for them. And another district game in 2-2A that is going to be exciting to those communities, Mangum and the Ravel Hornets. They get started at 1 o'clock today, that game at Ravel, for people that want to go out and see that one. That should be a good one as well. And then finally in 1A, we already mentioned the St. Frederick Union Parish game. District game, Delhi Charter and Oak Grove starting at 1 o'clock today. That one will be at Oak Grove. The Tigers, of course, coming off the big run to Sulphur last year, and that was in 2A. That's trying to repeat that success in 1A. As is OCS moving up to 2A. We already mentioned this one as well. Just a reminder, Darbon Woods Charter from that district, they're going to play Forest today out of district at 2:30. That one will start at Forest. So, and also, here's another one, too. Actually, the LHSA has Forest. If anybody wants to call in and let us know exactly what's going on, they actually have Forest playing twice today. I have another game starting at 12 on the schedule against Beekman Charter. So, Forest scheduled apparently to play Beekman Charter and Darbon Woods.
Yeah, well, you never know. I know that there's been a lot of, you know, like you said earlier, weather issues this week. So, Beekman Charter playing with basically a JV team. They've got three seniors, too, that play a lot. They have no juniors, and the rest sophomore, freshmen, and a couple eighth graders. So,
right.
And then for those of you who don't know, Family Community Christian School in Winsboro is run by former Claiborne Christian principal Liz Rigdon. So local connection there, even though she's still in the area. So, Cody, let's talk about the LHSAA briefly. There's some things going on. I want to talk briefly, just quickly. I want to make a comment and get your thought, and then you can go on with some bigger things in the LHSAA. But the walk-up music, to me, is ridiculous. They've said they can now use it, which is fine. I don't have a problem with walk-up music. I love it. But it cannot contain, it says, only music that does not contain profanity and or sexual innuendo should be played. We are talking high school. Why would they be playing it anyway? Why would they be playing that type of music anyway?
Yeah, that, you know, I like the walk-up music. I think it's a part of the game. It shouldn't be taken away, but there's got to be some control. There's got to be some kind of editorial judgment. I'm in favor of them getting a list together of 30 some odd songs at the beginning of the year, let the kids pick out, off of that list and not stray off of that list. Sometimes you can't trust people's judgment in certain situations, and in that situation, they're really failing in some of these ballparks. And it got to a point where the LHSA felt like they needed to act, and and it upset a lot of people, and to the point where they reversed course just a couple of days later. But, you know, just a little bit more, I think, of editorial judgment by the schools could just fix a lot of that.
And you don't have to name names, but you've been to a lot of baseball and softball games. Were you hearing things, inappropriate songs?
Yes, I have heard over the last few years. I have heard some things, you know, and not just baseball, basketball and football as well, that make you kind of raise your eyebrow.
And that's, you know, again, that's the fault of adults.
Right.
Because that's who's making those decisions. Even if it's a request by the kids, the decision's made by adults. So,
right.
You know, again, we've always said the problem with youth sports is not the kids, it's the adults. So what else is going on big with the LHSAA?
Of course, the biggest thing is they'll get together in June to have a special session where they will vote and discuss this new playoff scenario, playoff format that would combine Class B and C, so there would be only a larger Class B, no Class C. There would be 1A through 3A would be divided by rural and metro schools, and then 4A and 5A would come back together like it was 3 years ago, and there wouldn't be any split there. One thing that I don't know if people realize this or not, but I got a clarification from somebody on the executive committee last week. They don't have to just vote on that. Like, it can be changed. They're not going to go down there and just do a yes or no vote on this. It'll be discussed, and it could have some amendments, and it could look completely different by the time they actually vote on it. So it is certainly kind of a wait-and-see thing on that.
Well, I think that we were fine the way it was until some of the 5A schools got tired of getting beat by Evangel. When you had a school that was a Class 1A in size but winning 5A state championships, some of the 5A schools couldn't handle it and raised a ruckus. I think that schools should be allowed to play up. Can't play down, of course, but if you are a 1A school and you want to play in 5A, I say go for it. Now, again, you're going to throw out all the recruiting stuff. I'm sorry, but I've been around this too long. All the schools are recruiting. Some of them are just doing it better than others. Everybody's trying to get the best athletes they can in high school. Yes, in high school. Do the private schools have an advantage? Sure they do. But, you know, just go out and beat them, and you won't have to listen to it. If you just go out and beat them, they won't keep trying to play as far up as they are maybe. So we need to get back to where it's the schools against the schools, and let's leave everybody's personalities out of it. But again, now we've gotten into politics, so personalities and favoritism are not going to go away. Do you agree?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, one thing that also was, and you know, I think a lot of people forget too, is a lot of this is just a big case of trying to please everybody. You can't make everybody happy. When Evangel and John Curtis were moved out of the upper classifications because 4A was as tired of Curtis as 5A is of Evangel, they moved them down to their regular 2A and 3A classifications, and then those schools started complaining about, you know, they the same thing. So it's just a big can't make everybody happy and can't stop complaining and can't get on the same page. And it's come to a point now you can't get on the same page. You bickered long enough. Now the legislature wants to get involved. And so it's a really, really big mess down there with the LHSAA.
Yeah, and the legislature needs to stay out of it. I mean, we don't need our government in. I mean, when I said politics, I wasn't talking about the government, you know, state government. I was talking about just the politics of everyday life and the people that are in the LHSAA, people on the executive committee and on this committee, and who's greasing their pockets, you know, whether literally or metaphorically. But play football. Let the kids play football. Now, I know it's a big deal in New Orleans because it's so compact and there's so many kids in a small area and so many schools, and it's a lot easier to, again, quote-unquote, recruit inside New Orleans because there's not as much distance to travel and that type of stuff. And there's alumni with money and you got scholarships, all of that type of stuff, and you don't have to go outside of your community to recruit, really. So I understand that that's a big deal. But, again, recruit better. You know, there's
And you know,
always...
one thing that go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, you know, one thing that as I was talking to someone else with earlier this week was, and they kind of brought up a very good point to me, was that this is today's evangel is not the same evangel. And, you know, if we have any evangel people out there, you know, I don't want to offend anyone, but today's evangel is not the same evangel as it was 10 years ago. They aren't, whether it be the opening of Calvary and the rise of their athletic programs in the Shreveport area, or the strengthening of Bird and some of the things that they're doing, the evangel is not dominating the way in many sports the way that they were 10 years ago. So really, any perceived big-time threat like it was 10 years ago to the 5A schools, I don't know that evangel really poses that now.
Right, exactly. You know, of course, if they, you know, but who knows? We could sit here and talk all day about this, but I think all schools recruit. I think some do it better than others, some with money. And if they're a private school, they may have more to offer, more things they can do. I understand that. I understand the difference in New Orleans and in North Louisiana. Like I said, much more concentrated area of athletes and schools inside New Orleans than there is in the rural areas that we have. But something has to be done. Let the kids play football. Again, I'll say this, that in the NFL, I'm one of those that, you know, it's 11 on 11. Line up. Don't tell anybody what you're doing. Snap the ball, and if the center wants to go out for a pass, let them go. It's compete, 11 on 11, you know, school against school. Let these kids compete, and let's see what's happening. Schools stop playing offensive music. Playing it too loud for spectators, that's one of the other caveats in the legislation, the new rule by the LHSAA for walk-up music. It can't be loud enough to bother spectators. Well, I used to do that. You know, I used to play the music in college for walk-ups and all of that. Tilt your speakers up in the air a little bit. If you're one of the fans who can't handle the loudness, bring some cotton or some earmuffs. But let these kids have fun. And don't play offensive music. It's high school, for God's sake. Cody, I really appreciate you. Remind everyone how they can keep up with you this week.
Follow all of my articles, of course. Different ways you can do that. TheNewsStar.com. You can link through your Facebook page. You can follow me on Facebook and Twitter and get to all the articles that way. On Twitter, CPTrail, capital TNS on there. And you can just search my name and should be able to find me pretty easily on Facebook as well.
All right, and you're out of town next week, so we won't have you on the show, but good luck to you, and we'll see you after that.
Have a good one, guys. Thanks.
All right. That was Cody Futrell. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Talkin' Sports, ESPN 97.7 FM. Had my own mic turned down. Welcome back to the program. Talkin' Sports here on ESPN 97.7 FM. We're going to go to the Car King hotline now and welcome in from Car King, Zach Green. Zach, how's it going today?
Man, enjoying this beautiful weather again on Saturday. How about y'all?
We're doing great. Want to take a second here and just say happy birthday, brother.
Oh, man, thank you. Appreciate it.
So how much older is Larry?
Larry is 10 or plus years older. I believe he is over 50.
Yes, he is. Yeah, I won't tell you how I know that for sure, but yes, he is over 50.
And, yeah, he's probably gonna kill me now that I told you that. But hey, we're brothers. We'll get over it.
That's right. Well, I used to drop Larry off at home after football practice in high school my senior year. So, unfortunately, I know exactly how old Larry is. But happy birthday to you, and glad you get to share some of that with us by telling us what's hot on the lot.
Sure, absolutely. Let's see. Today we have a 2011 Nissan Maxima. This is the premium package. It's got the sunroof, the nav, the leather, the heated seats. I'm going to sell this thing for $14,995. I also have a 2015 Chrysler 200S. With 19,000 miles, leather, sunroof loaded. That thing is going to go for around $15,995. I have a 2014 Ford Focus SE leather sunroof. 40,000 miles, 30 miles to the gallon. going to sell that for $10,500. And that's what's hot on the lot today.
All right. Again, another beautiful day to get out and do some car shopping on your way to the ballpark. Remind everyone where you're located and how to find you.
Absolutely. We're at 12 Louisville Avenue. Give us a call at 318-330-9285. Check us out at ClarkKingMonroe.com. And have a great day, guys.
All right, man, and have a happy birthday, bud.
Thank you again.
All right, well, that was Zach Green from Car King on the Car King Hotline. All our guests joining us on the Car King Hotline. You can, too, at 888-993-7762. While we wait for, or do we need to go ahead and take a break now since I missed one, Tabor?
Yes, let's go ahead and do that.
All right, we're going to go ahead and take a quick break, and hopefully when we come back, we'll get Dr. Douglas Brown. You're listening to Talking Sports, ESPN 97.7 FM. Welcome back to the program, Talking Sports, here on ESPN 97.7 FM. It's just you and me, and I'm B, your host, Byron Avery, Talking Sports, ESPN 97.7 FM. It's my personal pleasure to welcome to the program one of our local orthopedic surgeons, Dr. Douglas Brown. Welcome to the show, Doc.
Thank you, Byron. Appreciate it.
Sorry we missed you last week, but I'm so glad we got you this week. I've unfortunately or fortunately, however you want to look at it, my family has been coming to see you for several years now, and I happened to be in the hallway one day waiting for one of my kids to finish getting some x-rays. By the way, they glow in the dark now. But I was looking on the wall, and you've got several things, you know, on your wall, and I noticed that you are a former Duke football player, and I had no idea. Tell us about that. You're originally from Virginia, is that correct?
Yeah, I grew up in Virginia and played high school football there at a high school, sort of like our high schools here in North Louisiana, and was fortunate enough to get some accolades. We actually won the state championship my senior year, and interestingly enough, our coach was about 10 years later featured in the movie Return of the Titans with Denzel Washington. He was the opposing coach in the final game, if you remember that movie.
Yes.
His name was Ed Henry. Anyway, he put together a pretty good team and taught us a lot at the high school level, and a number of us went on to play college football. I ended up going to Duke and was fortunate enough to be there when they went to the Cotton Bowl in 61, which was really the last major bowl that Duke played in until really the recent years when David Cutcliffe has become their coach. What happened, we had some really good teams back in the early 60s up until probably the mid to late 60s. And then they went through this period of kind of de-emphasizing football a little bit, sort of like the Ivy League schools. And football took a dive for about 30 years until they finally got it resurrected. And they're back kind of in the limelight. And so it was a extraordinary period in my life. And Got to play on a big time team. We had played Arkansas in the Cotton Bowl and fortunately beat them 7-6. And Jerry Jones and Jimmy Johnson were guards on that Arkansas team. Interestingly enough, and
well, I'm glad you beat them.
Yeah, and the Duke team about 3 or 4 years before I got there had played LSU down in Tiger Stadium, and some of the older players on the team when I came in and in 60 had some memories of that game at LSU and Tiger Stadium, and they said that was an experience that they didn't particularly want to repeat, but that it was apparently they played them in 57, which was right before LSU, I think, won the national championship. But it was during those days when Paul Dietzel had the Chinese Bandits and the Go Team and the Stop Team and all that. And these guys said, my word, they entered Tiger Stadium, and it was about 2 hours before the game, and that place was already jammed, and you could tell it was going to be an exciting place to play. Anyway.
So you were at Duke from 60 to 64?
Yeah, 60 to 64. I was what we called a halfback in those days, which now you'd call kind of a wide receiver, I guess. And, you know, we had to block and tackle, play both ways. And I played cornerback on defense. And it was during that sort of strange era of college football when they didn't platoon the teams like they do now. And so if you were on the field, you had to go both ways. And so I think after about 4 or 5 years of doing that, the NCAA decided that was a bad idea. And they needed to go back to having offensive teams and defensive teams and increase the overall quality of the game. But because of that, during that period, we had to play both ways. So back then,
did freshmen play on varsity?
Yeah, well, we were part of the varsity, but we weren't actually allowed to play in the varsity games. We were the, you might call, the scout team.
Okay.
So I ended up playing, you know, the position of the All-American from Southern California when we were getting ready to play Southern Cal. And then the halfback from Michigan when we played Michigan. So that was quite an experience. But the next year, of course, I was on the varsity, and I was a kicker as well, and punted and place kicked and started really working into the regular rotation at that point.
So did you have are there any memories that from specific games that you have that you could share with us?
Well, one was we played Roger Staubach at Navy. He was actually in the class one behind me, although Roger had done an extra year of high school at New Mexico Military Academy to get ready for the Navy. And so we chased him all over the field. We fortunately were able to beat him, but it was in a stadium in Norfolk, Virginia that they called the Oyster Bowl. And so we would play Navy in this Oyster Bowl every year. And Roger, the next year after that, was the Heisman Trophy winner. But he was quite amazing. And I'm trying to think that was really quite an experience. We played Florida in the Gator Bowl, the old Gator Bowl, but it was kind of before Florida became the dominance in the SEC that they later became.
Was Spurrier in Florida at that point?
Yeah, I think Spurrier was a freshman, maybe a sophomore, my senior year when we played him. And I remember he was throwing the ball all over the place, but we played a real kind of basic like Woody Hayes called it, 4 yards in a cloud of dust. And our offense had a down-and-out sideline pass pattern that was very basic, but everything keyed off the cornerback on defense. And if he went one way, the halfback caught the pass. If he went the other way, the pass went to the end. And if he didn't move at all, the quarterback kept the ball. So, you know, it was almost like a spread option kind of a thing, but it was before any of that was really developed.
Right. Now, you told me the other day that you still keep up with Duke Athletics.
Yeah, we had a 50-year reunion of the guys who were on the team in the 61 Cotton Bowl. So we got together a couple of years ago, and they honored us by bringing us on the field and all that stuff. And then when the Cotton Bowl was actually played over in Dallas in the new Texas Stadium, they got the players from Duke and from Arkansas to come back for a sort of a walk on the field visit. And I was had some other issues and wasn't able to make it, unfortunately, but the guys, the friends of mine that went said it was really a special time. And but it was not in the old original Cotton Bowl. It was in the new Texas Stadium.
Okay. Did you have any aspirations of playing in the NFL at that time?
Well, I think I did when I came out of high school, but once I got to college, I realized that I was probably peeking out. I had met my match. We did have a number of players who went on and played in the NFL, and in fact, one of my best friends and classmates and a guy who was in my wedding was Jay Wilkinson, and his father was the famous Oklahoma football coach, Bud Wilkinson.
Wow. Yep.
And Jay made All-American our senior year and was the number one punt returner in the nation. And he got a he got an offer to go with the Bears, and I think they offered him a signing bonus of $25,000. And Jay said, you know, he thought he'd probably had enough football at that point. He played in a couple of All-Star games and ended up going to theological school. So it was a different time. You know, our aspirations were mostly on getting on with professional life. A few of our team members did play in the NFL. One guy, Chuck Walker, played for the St. Louis Cardinals for about 10 years as an offensive lineman. And Mike Curtis played linebacker for the Colts for 10 or 15 years, was all pro. And so we had our share of NFL players, but I wasn't one of them.
Well, great transition. Speaking of getting prepared to go on with your professional lives, you did something else that I really admire. You went into the Navy, and you were a surgeon for our soldiers in Vietnam at one point.
Yeah, I was down in a charity hospital studying surgery at Tulane, and it was right in the height of the Vietnam War in the late 60s, and everybody was getting drafted, and so my number came up, and I fortunately got called into the Navy. So I got sent over to a naval air station in the Philippines, but we flew in and out of Vietnam and ended up taking care of Marines and Cameron and Da Nang, and that was quite an experience that I don't really want to relive.
No, I can understand that, but
yeah,
definitely appreciate that, and I know our boys did too back then. And did you just say that you were in the Philippines in the 60s?
Yeah. We our home base was a small air station outside of Manila in the Philippines, and we flew missions in and out of Vietnam. So I was our little hospital in the Philippines actually served a lot of Filipinos and Americans and dependents and people from that region. So we found ourselves delivering babies and setting fractures and doing all kinds of stuff that kind of prepared us for later careers. But at the time, it was just expected that we would do these things.
Right. Now, I asked that because my dad was a career had a career in the Air Force. And he was in the Philippines multiple times, and he was in Manila, so might have been the same.
Yeah, he probably would have been up at Clark Air Force Base, which was north of Manila, and that was really the biggest base in the Philippines, and that was the one that we would fly in and out of if we were going any real distance. The Navy had smaller naval air stations, and we had, of course, a big base at Subic Bay, which had the aircraft carriers and the big ships would come in there. But as far as land size and really the biggest hospital in the Philippines, it was at Clark Air Force Base.
Okay. Well, Doc, I know you've got your offices in Monroe and West Monroe, and you're also in Rayville, is that correct?
Yeah, we go to Rayville and do a little clinic over there at for the convenience of the folks that live in those parishes, the river parishes, and have a little trouble getting to Monroe. So we do that once a week on Wednesday mornings, and I find it to be very enlightening and enjoyable, and gives me a chance to see folks that we wouldn't otherwise see in Monroe.
Well, I can tell you, I know you won't, but if you ever need a reference, you can tell them to speak to anyone in my family, because you've operated on three of us and treat all five of us. So I appreciate that, and I really appreciate you taking your time today to be on the show.
Well, I appreciate that, Byron, and I want to say to the public, you've got a wonderful family, and it's a pleasure being part of it and being able to treat you all.
All right. Well, Doc, again, fortunately or unfortunately, I'm sure I'll see you soon.
Okay.
Seems like we're there all the time, but thanks again, and have a great rest of your weekend.
You bet, and thanks for calling, Byron.
All right. That was Dr. Douglas Brown, orthopedic surgeon in Monroe, West Monroe, and Ravel. We're going to take another break. When we come back, we're going to have our What's Up segment with Tag Rome. You're listening to Talkin' Sports, ESPN 97.7 FM. Welcome back to the program. I keep turning my own mic down here for some reason. Welcome back to the program, Talkin' Sports, ESPN 97.7 FM. Welcome back. This hour brought to you by the Riverport Creative Group in West Monroe, riverportcreativegroup.com. We are brought to you by Anytime Fitness of Monroe, West Monroe, and Calhoun, and Anytime Fitness of Ruston and Texarkana. We are presented by DBAT, DBAT for all your baseball and softball training needs, dbatmonroe.com. It is time, once again, our second installment of our Where Are They Now program called What's Up?
What's happening, hot stuff?
Weather!
What's up, Doc?
And this week we go back a little ways. We go back to high school days in the late 70s, college days in the early 80s, which means he's now an old man. But we welcome to the program former Lincoln Parish High School star and former NLU star, Tag Rome. Tag, welcome.
Byron, thank you. Boy, I tell you what an introduction, huh? The old man. Boy, that makes me feel good. But I am. You got it right.
Well, good, you're older than me today. And I'm old. I really appreciate it. It's a beautiful day outside. I'm sorry that we couldn't get you last week and experience Key Biscayne, Florida with you. I know that was you were probably having a tough time transitioning from the Bahamas to Key Biscayne.
Well, the tough transition I'm having right now is trying to beat my wife Cassie in tennis. I got a goose egg right now. I can't seem to get a win. I'm not used to losing like this, so that's what I've been playing a little bit of that lately. I tell you, what a tough game. I think it's a little tougher than football.
Well, so this is a welcome break. You can use our show as an excuse to get out of that whooping.
That's right. That's exactly right.
So I remember watching you. You're a couple years ahead of me. Watching you when you played at Cedar Creek and trying to decide, sure. And I know what you'll say, but trying to decide who was faster, you or Gary Sonye, but I know you were plenty fast at Cedar Creek.
Well, I think Sonye and I, we've stayed in touch. I had probably didn't talk to him in a few months, but we were talking about it a while back. I think we're going to try before one of the football games this year. We're going to have a little race to see who exactly was the fastest. But I enjoyed playing against Gary Sonye. That was a great rival we had over there at Ridgedale back in high school. And, you know, it's really unique when you look back at those days in the late 70s and early 80s, when you look at the coaches that were there then, and I always look back on that, and I was pretty blessed to have people like Tommy Joe Eagles and Chick Childress, and of course old Woody Boyles was over at Ridgedale, and you know, you just had some great leaders that were coaching us back then, so we were all very fortunate to have those people coaching us.
Now, I know you and I talked recently, and you brought that up. You know, you were at Cedar Creek, finished, I believe, in 79, and
right.
You had Chick Childress, more famous for his days at Ruston High. You had Tommy Joe Eagles, who went on to be the head coach at Louisiana Tech and Auburn.
Had George Stone in baseball. And
Stoney,
played
who coached at Ruston High, played for the Mets,
right.
Right. And then you had the track coach, who was
Maxie Hayes. Maxie Hayes was a well-renowned track guy that was around. He was just a tremendous track and field guy. He really was. And then,
time,
you know,
at that time, Cedar Creek, in the private school area, Cedar Creek was a powerhouse. Talk about your days briefly before we move on to NLU, but tell me, you know, some of your highlights from Cedar Creek.
Well, I think it was a time there that there was a lot of great rivalries there between all throughout the Delta. When you look over at River Oaks, I remember playing with Bobby Craighead and Woody Ledbetter and those guys, and the late Dewey McDaniels, my dear friend, who played over at Ridge Riverfield, and Joe Meeks was the head coach there, and just a lot of great people. I remember that during that era. And it was just a tight-knit group of schools there, you know, even going over to Trinity Heights and Shreveport. It was just a strong league at that time, and I just remember it being very competitive. And of course, a lot of people used to say, you know, you're coming out of the Lisa League. And, of course, I used to always say it, you know, how you leave. It's, you know, it's how you enter it. It's how you leave it. So,
right.
But we had some very good competition back then, and I remember those days. And just nothing but fond memories of the days at Cedar Creek.
Yeah, you had those Johnson boys at Riverfield. You had Bobby Craighead and some of those other guys at River Oaks. You had some top-notch athletes at Tensaw Academy back then. So it was there were some players.
That's right. And just a lot of schools within close proximity, and even up in Briarfield and Bastrop.
Yep.
And it just of course we had some great basketball years through there. And you know, Tommy Joe was just as fine a basketball coach as there was.
Yep. And then you moved on. You got to play at NLU, and I remember going to games and seeing John Holman just throw that ball as hard as he could, and seeing Tag Rome just lay out and make the catch. So you made John Holman, right?
Well, you know, we argue about that all the time. John was, let me tell you, John Holman, he was a winner. I tell you, he could move the chains. He just had a tough time throwing a spiral. That was the big thing with him. He was great moving the chains, but we used to pick at him all the time because he just had a tough time with that. But those were some really fun years. You know, Northeast was kind of coming into its own, and John David Crow, I mean, golly, to have the Heisman Trophy there, the 57 Heisman Trophy winner is, you know, is my boyhood coach, and going in there was just an awesome experience, really. And we were kind of coming into our own then, you know. Dr. Vines was doing a great job as our president, and we just were making the move. And heck, we, you know, had, you know, 12,000, 13,000 students there, and we just had a great tradition going throughout the 80s. Then Pat Collins took over, and just a lot of fond memories, a lot of great years, and it was a good time, no doubt.
And I can't remember if this was during your time or right after, but did you play with David Outley?
David Outley, the old alias Mule, that was his name. He came from Louisiana Tech, and it's funny, I was just on a State Farm trip, and his girlfriend back then is a State Farm agent up in Rogers, Arkansas, and saw her. She came in the airport. I hadn't seen her in years, and she came up, and we started talking about it. It's funny you mentioned that about Outley, because
well,
I just had that conversation.
I've mentioned on the air before the most incredible play I've ever seen. It was Northeast against Nicholls State, and I don't remember the score, but obviously it was close because Nicholls was going for an onside kick late in the game, and Outley was on that hands team up there, and they kicked it, you know, and he caught it right in the front, made one move, and was gone to the house.
Yeah, instead of just securing the ball, he took it to the house with his animated way. He was a colorful guy, man. He was a lot of fun, and I tell you what, it was just one of many. You know, there was so many guys back then. But he was a great athlete. There's no doubt about it. He was a good teammate and a good player.
And so now you've moved on. After Northeast, you became a State Farm agent. Anything in between college and State Farm? And I know you've become a very successful State Farm agent, and you can tell us all about your agency and how people, you know, in that area can get in touch with you. But anything between then that we didn't know about?
Well, I think that you know, I've always stayed close to athletics and football, and I think some very fond years was the year when my son was in high school and had the opportunity to coach him in baseball and football when we started the football program over here at Calvary and Shreveport. Those were some great years when I look at it. You know, State Farm has been a means to an end, and I've been very blessed to have a State Farm office and a State Farm agency to take care of my family, and I've got a lot of pride in that. State Farm's a wonderful company, and they've been very good to me. But still, all along the way, my passion has been athletics, and I've tried to stay involved. You know, for 10 years, I did the radio and the TV at ULM and Northeastern at that time with Frank Hoffman and Lou Sinema and Bruce Hanks and all those guys. Those were some great years. You know, I've stayed very close to athletics and still do. That's my passion. There's no doubt about it. But State Farm, like I said, has been a great career for me, and I take great pride in it, and I have a lot of good feelings for State Farm and the company and what it's done for myself and my family.
All right, so three things that we've mentioned that I want to expand on a little bit.
Okay.
Number one, Northeast ULM.
Okay.
The current state. They are Division 1A team, FCS, FBS. I can't ever keep up with who.
Right.
They're all BS. So. But
okay. Go ahead. I'm gonna overlook that. They're all BS. I got you. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, the whole situation with the
right,
money.
Right. Exactly.
But I've said before that ULM needs to decide who it is. And if they don't have the money to recruit, if they don't have the money, and again, I'm a tech grad, but my wife's an NLU grad. I mean, we need ULM to be successful in this area.
Sure.
I root for them all the time. But, you know, the message from there is they don't have the money, the resources to get so many ineligible players. They don't have the resources to help educate them, and I don't think they should have to. I think our high schools need to do a better job. Another story there, but they have, you know, they still live on the 87 national championship team,
right?
Well, they need to decide who they are. What's your thoughts on that?
I will elaborate on that, and I feel like I'm knowledgeable about what's going on there. I'm going to probably disagree a little bit, because I want to tell you, I had the honor of serving on the coaches selection committee and to spend some time with Dr. Bruno and other people on the committee. I think we're where we need to be. I think we've made a big turn. Our new investment in this coaching staff that we have in place, I think you're going to see some positive things. It wasn't a couple of years ago we did go to the independence poll, but I think when people talk about the apathy and all the things that are going on that really sometimes are not necessarily knowledgeable about it, I think people embellish things. I'm not saying we have more money than most universities around, but I know Dr. Bruno and what's taken place here recently has made a huge commitment towards putting us to the middle or top tier of the Sun Belt Conference. And the Sun Belt Conference is a fine conference. I don't know why that. I know you're a tech guy, and I'm a ULM guy. I think I don't think we're living off the '87. That was a great era during the '80s. I think we controlled pretty much the area in football then. We've fallen at times. We did come back and go to the Eye Bowl, but I think we're a sleeping giant. I think we have a lot of potential there at ULM. I think we have one of the most beautiful campuses around and throughout our conference. And I personally, and I know it sounds whatever, I think we should be playing a home and home the first game of the year, the last game of the year with Louisiana Tech. Those are some of the finest rivalries there were. I mean, no one can deny the 30, 40,000 people that would be there, the tailgating along I-20. So I think that needs to come back. It's good for the locals. It's good for the economy. Any way you slice it. I know that they can be said, well, it just doesn't pay for us to do that. Well, it's like anything else. Let's line up and race. Let's line up and play. And I think it's good for the locals. I think it's good for our culture in our area. I think we're missing out. And I know people in Ruston would argue with me on that. But understand that
I'm not saying that ULM is living off the 87 national championship team. I just say that's what people mention all the time.
Sure.
When they're talking about highlights, I'm in favor of ULM. I have nothing against what they're doing. I just think there needs to be, and again, whether you're right, the people not in the know make assumptions and statements based on assumptions, and that's not good. But I just think ULM needs to make that commitment, and let's go do it. And again, I agree, Tech and ULM should be playing every sport every year. I've always been a proponent of that, and if you lose to them, get better and don't lose again.
Well, I feel good about our administration right now, our people in our athletic administration, and obviously our coaching staff in basketball, football, and those guys, I think, are doing everything to stay away from that apathy. You know, and I think some things came out and went on the last 6 months, and I'm not over there and right in the middle of it, but I think some of it could have been embellished. And then once the train gets going, you know how it is, and I think it really got out of hand, and that's self-destruction, and I think we're better than that. And once you get some positive things going, and with that staff they have there now, and with Viator and Mike Collins back in town, and Manny Michelle, and all these coaches they've brought in, I think you're going to see some positive things happen. I feel very confident that it's going to turn. I really do.
I hope so. I hope so. Yeah. Like I said, we need them to be successful in this sure. area. And again, I know I'm taking advantage of your time here, but I've got 1 minute left. So briefly, you mentioned Calvary, all right?
Uh-huh.
So what are your thoughts on the LHSAA, the select, non-select? I think that schools should be able to play up, you know, and if you can't, you know, West Monroe and some of those 5A schools got tired of Evangel beating them. And yeah. just briefly, your thoughts on the select, non-select issue and where it's headed.
I think it's watered down. I think Louisiana High School Athletics had one of the greatest traditions there ever were. I think it's watered down now. You got nine. And then I'm probably biased towards football. I'm not knowledgeable about the basketball side of it and the spring sports, baseball, and all of that. But just looking at football, I think it's really hurt. I thought it was pretty awesome to have a Friday-Saturday deal, an extravaganza one weekend, man. You had 10 teams down there, and it wasn't watered down. The road to get there was very difficult. I know there's rules and things that have to be put in place, but, man, we've always had parochial schools, evangelical schools, and high schools. I think they all should be playing. I think they all have their advantages to a certain point. You know, sure, I think one school may have more advantages than the other, but I think it all comes out in the wash. And I know that's a general statement. You asked me to say it in 1 minute, but I'm for going back the other way personally, and of course I don't have a dog in the hunt, I do. My son's coaching over at Calvary right now. He wants to pursue a coaching career, so I'm gonna support him. But I think that that deal, I'd like to see it the other way. I think it's better for the public. I think it's better for the kids.
I agree, Tag, 100%. I can't thank you enough for taking your time today to be with us. Glad to know what's going on with you and that you're doing well, and hopefully I can reach back out to you down the road.
Sounds good, my man. It's great talking to you and talking about the old days, but hey, we all got to move forward, right?
All right, and I want to, you contact me, and I'm going to sell tickets to that race between you and Sanye.
That's right. Tell him I said I'm the favorite right now.
All right. You're always your favorite.
Thank you, Byron. I appreciate
all right,
it. Great talking to you.
Okay, have a good one. We're going to take a break here. You're listening to ESPN 97.7 FM. Welcome back to the program, Talking Sports, ESPN 97.7 FM. This hour brought to you by the Riverport Creative Group, riverportcreativegroup.com. We are presented by DBAT of Monroe, DBAT for all your baseball and softball training needs, dbatmonroe.com. This segment sponsored by Katie's of Monroe and Farmerville. Go see them off Louisville Avenue next to the State Farm building with the red roof. Time now for a little, I guess you could say some of it's Saints talk, but we've got Sean Williams, the featured analyst and NFC West coordinator for ProFootballSpot.com. Got him in studio and on the line with us on the Car King Hotline, his partner in crime, Jack Kopansky. Jack is an analyst and editor for ProFootballSpot.com, also a staff writer for both DogPoundDaily.com and CagePages.com on the fan-sided network. Jack, welcome to the program.
Byron, thanks for having me on, man.
Sean, welcome back to the studio.
Glad to be here, man. All right. Jack.
How's it going, Sean?
Going well, man.
All right, so we've got you guys on here, and you and Jack combined for the feature, The Price of Success.
Yes, sir.
go ahead and just jump in and lead us here. We've talked about it before, and you've been on with mm-hmm. Fox and talked about it. Between you and Jack, just tell us kind of who you talked to and what you think you got out of this.
Okay, Jack, you want to start that off?
Sure. You know, for me personally, it was when I first thought about doing a piece like this, it was originally supposed to be one piece that broke down, in my thoughts, why an ACL was a more devastating injury to an athlete than a concussion. And throughout the research that we've gone through doing these pieces, it's become much harder, if not impossible, to say that one of them is distinctively worse than the other. But, you know, and finding that out wouldn't have been possible without, you know, I talked to past coaches from my high school, a trainer from my high school, a doctor from my area, you know, a guy who specializes in concussions that I know who invented a whole different kind of system for treating concussions. So it was a very in-depth and a very eye-opening process as to what exactly these two injuries are that can cost athletes so much time from their career and, in concussions' case, their lives.
And with me, I interviewed local orthopedic surgeon Dr. Saul Graves from the Northeast Louisiana orthopedic clinic over there on Louisville, and we talked about the severity of the injuries and coming back from the injuries, all of that, which was in the last part of the series that we published. And I think for Jack and I both, the impetus for getting this started was going and seeing the concussion movie. I know for me, I'm not going to say it was the sole motivation, but I mean, it had a lot to do with in our minds saying, you know, there's something here that the casual sports fan needs to know. And we never took the approach, as a matter of fact, we tried very hard to take the approach to not be an expose as such, just kind of present the facts and the figures, you know, and enlighten people, because, you know, we love this game, always have. And there's nothing that I can think of that would be more distasteful to me than to see a world that existed without football. I don't want to see the game hurt in any way whatsoever. But in the grand scheme of things, if this game is going to survive, then the beginning of that process is going to have to be for the guys that make it what it is, for them to survive as well.
Right. Now, Jack, what do you think your takeaway is from having done this research and written this article and, you know, other people, because you've forwarded it along, other people have read it. What's your takeaway from what you learned?
For me, the biggest thing was, you know, you hear so much. You know, Sean mentioned the concussion movie, which it was a very big part of sort of what made us want to dig deeper into this. And you hear so much that, you know, obviously football is a violent sport. You know, head injuries are going to happen. But for me, it was just finding out the sheer number of not only the diagnosed concussions, but the ones that even might go undiagnosed and unannounced in only, I think I was looking at a 4-year span. So concussions, it was even more eye-opening than I had ever thought about it before, and especially with the steps that the NFL is taking, they're finally admitting the link between football and head trauma that's causing CTE, so that is a huge step. And as far as ACLs, I don't want to say equally as eye-opening, because it's hard to really compare and contrast the two as far as what I've learned, because they're two very different injuries. But just the sheer unpredictability that can come from when you tear your ACL or when you have a knee injury, how it comes from something just as a bad step or literally how you were born. So it was very rewarding to me to be able to learn all this stuff about, like Sean said, a game we love so much that, you know, that it seems players and the fans might take for granted at times because of what these injuries can do to a player.
Okay.
To a large extent, we're kind of a society that, well, this guy just took a shot and apparently has a concussion, or this guy just blew his knee out, and it's like, get him out of there, plug in the next body, and let's go. And that's really not respectful for the player, so to speak. I know that's part of the game and all that, but these guys give their all basically for our entertainment. Sure, they get paid massive amounts of money to do it, but, you know, this is all done for our entertainment in a big, big way. And I think we should respect those guys enough to fully understand the extent that they go to for us to be able to wear the jerseys and to have the T-shirts with the helmets on them and stuff like that.
So is that what was your takeaway? Is that it, or
pretty much? Yeah, that I think that there's so much that we don't know about the injuries, and it's not necessarily we don't know because we don't want to know so much as it is, well, on one hand, there's some things that you're not going to know because they're not being presented in such a way as to be known generally. But if you know how to look and where to look, you can find the information that you're looking for. But the price that these sports stars, not just NFL, baseball, basketball, soccer, all these sports combined, the price that these athletes pay to be in the public eye and to do what they do so well, the amount of risk that they accept, it's worthy of respect.
Well, and then again, you take into consideration all that you just mentioned, then all those same sports on the collegiate level,
sure,
where we don't know as much about what's happening with injuries, and then down to the high school level, and even below that. So these injuries, and Jack, I'm sure you'll agree with me, the more we learn about them, you could say the better, but the more we learn about them, the less someone is going to want to play those sports. So it's kind of a...
And at that lower level, the less, the even... Not necessarily the player themselves, but parents don't want their kids playing.
Yeah, but Jack, in your area, you know, it's a little different. I mean, sports are big everywhere. Of course, in Northeast Louisiana, we want to say that they're bigger than anywhere, but I'm sure you experienced the same thing where you're from.
Yeah, you know, I came from, you know, a smaller Division I high school football program, you know, and football was emphasized a lot. But, you know, it's we had teams that were just absolute powerhouses and had players that were going off to D1 schools and, you know, starting quarterbacks and whatnot. So for me personally, we in my high school didn't put the kind of emphasis on it that I know other places do. But, yeah, it is definitely something that, especially at the high school level, can really sort of take on this whole, I don't want to say mind of its own, but it can sort of take on this whole different, just state of being. Like it's its own little city or its own town that is the football team. And they'll do whatever they can to keep it going.
Yeah, absolutely. With West Monroe High School here, it's that way. And just about every school in this area, of course, you know a lot about that. You know a lot about the cold. And you do know a lot about losing, being, you know, from Cleveland, so...
Yeah, unfortunately, you're not wrong there. You're not wrong.
But I've seen some good Cleveland football back in the day.
Shots fired.
I was a fan of Bernie Kosar.
He was
different, and both the way he thought, the way he talked, and the way he played football, and especially the way he threw a football. But he was a leader, and he was a winner. And you know, I like to see most teams, other than the NFC South and Dallas, you know, do well. But I like it when Cleveland is good. I like it when, you know, some of those other teams are good. But
I don't think anybody's waited as long
is the not necessarily the Cleveland franchise, but the people that support Cleveland.
Yeah, I'm gonna tell you, ever since Jim Brown retired after 9 years, then they just haven't known what to do.
I tell you, some of the best games that I've ever I ever remember sitting down and watching was the Kosar and Elway battles in the AFC Championship.
The drive, and then what was that guy's name? Mac, the guy that fumbled the ball.
Cedric Mack.
Was it? No. Who was the running back, Jack?
I unfortunately, all
Ernest
that was before my time.
Ernest Byner. Yeah. Thanks, Jack.
There you go.
Yeah, but he fumbled it basically at the goal line. Yeah. And then there comes Elway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a famous shirt that's sold in Cleveland that it just has a list of all the horrible things that happened to Cleveland. There's the drive, the shot, the fumble, the decision, you know. So we definitely the fans bear a lot of the brunt of what goes on with our sports teams.
All right, well, let's switch gears real quick. I got both of you here. All right. We've had some you can call it excitement with the NFL draft. The number one and number two picks being traded. Now, one of our guys in our local ESPN family, Santoria Black, has said, and he's dead sure, and him and Sean Fox have a bet, Santoria is sure that the Eagles are going to pick Ezekiel Elliott with the number two pick and not a quarterback. I've been looking at it. Me and Tabor had a discussion this morning. He disagrees with me, but I'm now on Santoria's side. I think that the Eagles just had it figured out that for sure Dallas was going to take Ezekiel Elliott with the number four pick. The Eagles have two quarterbacks that are serviceable quarterbacks. They're paying them a lot of money, $19 million a year between the two of them, I believe.
Yeah, they just gave Bradford, when they re-signed him, they gave him a big bump.
$22 million contract. Chase Daniels came over from Kansas City with Doug Peterson, making $7 million a year as a backup. I don't think that they're going to get rid of those two guys. They may try to trade Bradford later once they, you know, let him play this year. But I think they jumped up to get Ezekiel Elliott because they were sure the Cowboys were going to do it. And not just because it's the Cowboys, but they were sure that he'd be gone by number four. So I think they jumped up to get him so they can – if they've got somebody like that who can run, who can block, pick up the blitz, catch out of the backfield, I think they can win now.
John, what was your take on it?
Well, he disagrees with me adamantly.
John, what was your thoughts on?
Oh, okay. I was thinking Jack. I thought you said Jack. I'm with Sean. I think that Philly would not have put that much value into a move, or given up that much value, I should say, to take a running back, because they're picking at number two. But you have to consider all the value that they gave up in taking that pick, and I just don't see any team today taking a running back, giving up that much value in their draft to do so. Not with the way the game has become a passing game.
I can see it going either way. As what John just said, they're giving up so much, and you have to think that that's for a franchise player. Now, as you said, you've got Bradford and who else was
Chase
it?
Daniel.
Chase Daniel. Okay, career backup and someone that is a seasoned starter, regardless of how good he was. I can see where it would absolutely make sense for them to take Ezekiel Elliott because he, in my opinion, he's the strongest running back prospect in the draft this year. But if I had to venture a guess, I would think that they're going to get the leftover of whatever the Rams take, which, depending on what day of the week it is, the rumors that you're hearing are going back and forth between Wentz and Goff. You know, one day it's one, and the next day it's the other. If it were me, I tend to believe it's Goff simply because he's local and he can put a behind every 18 inches in that new stadium. So, but I believe that the Eagles more than likely are going to go quarterback.
Jack, what do you think?
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you there. I think that I mean, you've you both had said it already, the haul that they gave up to move up to, it would be incredibly hard to justify taking a running back with a second overall pick, especially in the league now where you so often hear that running backs don't go in the first round, much less the second overall pick. So taking that into consideration, along with the fact that you never know how long of a season Sam Bradford is going to give you, which is why I think that extension probably raised a few question marks, but I absolutely believe that they're going to go with whoever is left between Goff or Wentz, and I agree with you again, Sean. I would tend to believe that Wentz will be the one at two there, and I don't even know what would happen to the NFL draft world, to Philadelphia, to what would be going on in every team's war room if the Eagles took Ezekiel Elliott at two.
But just think how cool that would be if they did, how that everyone would freak out.
There would be papers flying and people drinking coffee
and other things.
I think then you have about three or four different teams trying to move up to number three, number four to grab Carson Wentz.
Yeah, you got 15 minutes to make a trade in your number where you pick.
Yeah, and then, of course, then San Diego, who's ready to trade right now,
mm-hmm.
all of a sudden they're backpedaling, trying to figure out, you know, okay, we take him, then what do we do, and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I don't know.
It real interesting that there's basically two franchise quarterbacks, such as they are, in the draft this year, and everybody's wanting to move back in the draft. It's even the teams that need a quarterback, a franchise quarterback, such as Cleveland.
Cleveland
has, Jack, I think you'll agree with me, Cleveland has its franchise quarterback now, right? RG3 is the future for Cleveland.
I don't know if I'd go that far. I think it's a step in the right direction. You know, I mean, so many of my buddies and so many Cleveland fans I know, we're all sort of echoing the same thing, is that this is the first time in probably at least since we've been back since '99 that we've gotten our number one choice for head coach. So we're really putting a lot of trust and a lot of faith in what Hugh Jackson's doing. So if he wants RG3 to start the season and be our quarterback, RG3 is going to start our season and be our quarterback. So
I think you could have done a lot worse. And honestly, Hugh Jackson is either going to score major points with the fan base based on giving Griffin the tools he's needing to succeed in that position and at that level and putting the right pieces around him, or mm-hmm. he's going to bomb miserably and they're going to want his head on a platter quickly.
You know, and
I'm not familiar enough with him to even offer up a suggestion as to which way that's going to go.
Well, I'll tell you this. If they want his head on a platter, they're going to be full because they've had a lot of those lately.
Yeah.
But I think RG3 is a good quarterback. I think if he can, get over himself and, avoid the injuries, I think he's a serviceable quarterback. I think he can lead you up and down the field, and that's what you need. Now, what do you think Cleveland does with their draft picks to help him?
The ever-present question of what Cleveland does with their draft pick. I'll start off by saying that I absolutely loved the trade that we made with Philly. You know, I think that was the Browns saying, we don't want Goff or Wentz, so let's get as many picks as we can, move back, and I think 8 is the perfect spot. So the way I see it, there's really two options. They're either going to trade back down again, or they're going to stay at 8, obviously. But there's so many holes on this team that I can't even venture a guess as to who they would pick, because there's talk that Tunsil could fall to 8, and if he's there, I think that he could really be taken under consideration. You know, there's a guy like Paxton Lynch, who I'm very high on. I think he could sit a year behind RG3, you know, work on his accuracy, and hopefully be ready to take over in 2017 or later should RG3 not pan out. If we trade back down, we get more picks. You know, it's almost nice to be in a situation where there's not one thing that you're just sort of resigned to, where it's like, oh, well, we need a quarterback or we need a receiver, so we're have to take this guy. It's like, there are so many ways we can go, and this is such a deep class that
us stockpiling these picks is one of the best things we could do, in my opinion.
All right. Well, I think I'm going to close with this. I think Cleveland trades down again a couple of spots, gets some more draft picks, starts building a team, and that's it. And that's after the Eagles take Ezekiel Elliott at number two. Guys, Jack Kopansky, tell us how we can keep up with you before the draft.
Sorry?
Tell us how we can keep up with you. Social media.
You can follow me on Twitter at JackPFBot. I'm also on Facebook, just Jack Kopansky. I'm not a very social media person. I just sort of stick with those two. I'll post my articles. I'll post some opinions every now and then, and I think I'm fine. So.
All right. And Sean?
At DrewsDad3721 on Twitter, on Who Dat Nation Redemption on Facebook, and... of course, you can follow Jack and I both on ProFootballSpot.com.
And thank you guys. Thanks for being on the Car King Hotline, Jack. Thanks for being in studio, Sean. Want to thank our broadcast partners, Allstate Fitness of Monroe, West Monroe, and Calhoun. Allstate Fitness, wow. Anytime Fitness of Monroe, West Monroe, and Calhoun. And Anytime Fitness of Ruston and Texarkana. Jeannie Eubanks Allstate Insurance in Ruston and Minden. DBAT of Monroe. Greg Phillips State Farm in Ruston. Greg Phillips is a good neighbor. Katie's of Monroe and Farmable. Car King, Pulpwood Producers, Glassworks of West Monroe, Riverport Creative Group, Assurance Financial Group, and Jeremy Hilton, Shield of Shelter Insurance. For myself, Byron Avery here in the Coldwell Maker Group 1 Studios in West Monroe, thanks go to John Tabor at HQ. We'll see you next week. Talking Sports, ESPN 97.7 FM.
Thanks for listening to the best of Talkin' Sports with Byron. To listen to the show live, tune in every Saturday to ESPN977.com or subscribe to the show in iTunes, on Stitcher, or at RedPeachSports.com.